हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Everybody has one of these, or?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So just for interest, you know, so we can see. Means this is that will be at the, means it's at the, any of the newer papers is the beginning of every one of them. But I also asked them to put it all together so it could be seen. So then we see here, okay. Nyaya Vaisheshika Sambandha. God is completely transcendental to the soul and the material nature. He is the operative but not the material cause of the universe. Right? It means, in other words, runs it, but technically we're the ones that are that's the cause of why it's going on. We get involved in the karma, then it's going on. We're not involved like that. So that aspect is correct, but that's all the farther they look at it. The soul is coexisting with God. It is indestructible, and consciousness is its accidental attribute. Right? In other words, it's not supposed to be conscious, but because you're dealing with material nature, then consciousness is there. Oh, I see. It's inside of that. Right. Okay. Then matter is coexisting with God, and it is the material cause of the universe. Okay, so the material cause and the causation theory is what transforms, right? Because the material nature itself is transforming, so therefore it is the cause. We put into motion, but it itself transforms. We're not like, you know, putting everything and making. No, it itself is the atoms are going together, coming apart, transforming into other forms.
So matter is conscious?
No. It's just coexisting.
It's just purely mechanistic.
Yes, just mechanistic. Like that. But the point is it's not purely mechanistic in that it's Krishna's potency that makes it happen. So the potencies that are making it happen are conscious. It's just that the matter itself is not. So Abhideya, obtaining valid knowledge of the external world and its relationship with the mind and self is the only way to attain liberation. The ultimate goal is to attain liberation, which is the state of an absolute freedom from all misery. Right? You know, I mean, so on the surface, sounds okay, but the only problem is that it's not the pure, you know, how you say, liberation. You know, it's not a sustainable liberation. And therefore, then, you know, it's only by developing a relationship with God. And as you see, is they don't have the concept that there is a relationship with God. Yes. Just God is there, we're there, and the material nature is there.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not saying it's illusion. They're just saying that you interact with the world, you suffer. You don't interact, you won't suffer. Therefore, by valid knowledge, you'll be able to understand the difference between yourself and the material world, separate yourself with it. From it, you won't suffer.
Their focus is themselves.
Yes, yes. Their focus is just on how to stop suffering, that's all. Absolute freedom from all suffering. But there is no absolute freedom by this method, yes.
Sir Maharaj, the Nyaya Visheshaka philosophies, their Prayojana is Brahma Jyoti.
It's not exactly Brahma Jyoti, because they're saying the soul is coexisting with God and it's eternally like that. So there is that separate identity, but the point is you won't be conscious of it. So it's more kind of just like a serious sleep.
Coma.
But it would be categorized within a Brahman like that, because there's so many varieties of what they consider is Brahman and the relationship with Brahman. You know, so you say ultimately they're impersonalists, but they accept the position of God, but not as a, so much as a person. It's like he's there, he could be a person or not, but it doesn't matter to them. You know, just like somebody has a car, so whether it's a 6-cylinder or 12-cylinder, it doesn't matter to you. You know, you're getting in a taxi, you want to go to the airport. You know, it's not that, you know, it matters. As long as the driver can drive and it'll get you there, you're comfortable. You know, does that make sense? You know, but he's just, you know, has some new little thing that he put on, this and that, and who cares? You know, he's got a new raccoon tail on the antenna. You know, it's like, Shankya. Shankya does not admit the existence of God. Instead, it sums up reality into two fundamental principles. Right? So, matter, prakriti, is the unconscious principle, which is the ultimate cause of the world. And three, the soul, purusha, is both the subject of knowledge and the object of knowledge. Purusha is not merely a substance with the attribute of consciousness, but it is rather pure consciousness itself. It's active only when connected to prakriti. Right, so again, you have the other. When you're connected, then there's activity. If you're not connected, there won't be. Abhideya, constant contemplation of the truth that the soul, purusha, is different from the body, prakriti, is the process for attaining the ultimate goal. Prayojana, the ultimate goal is liberation, a state in which the soul is separated from matter and is free of suffering. So again, this element of free of suffering. Just here in the atheistic Shankya, then God's not accepted. But if it's theistic Shankya, then you'll see it works very nicely with the Vaishnava philosophy. Like that. So he's only dealing with matter and spirit, because then Purusha and Prakriti are male and female. So it all gets down to that. So that's where that concept comes out of. Though, whether it's theistic or atheistic. Right? Yoga. God is the perfect supreme being who is an eternal, all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent God. Well qualified. God is the particular Purusha who is unaffected by the afflictions of ignorance. Matter, prakriti, is the eternal and ever-changing unconscious material principle. Three, the soul is pure conscious. Yoga accepts the Shankya view that prakriti and Purusha have no origin in God.
What's the origin?
That I'm not sure.
Eternal. Just like in the Irish.
Yeah, so it's eternal, but they put an emphasis there. That's the only thing. The others, they're eternal, but they're not. They don't have a problem that they don't look at. They don't say there he's coming from God or not, but here they happen to make that. Rather than stressing on discriminative knowledge as a means of attaining liberation, as Nyaya Vaisheshika and Shankya do, yoga lays down a practical method for control of the mind called the Eightfold Means of Yoga, Astanga Yoga, right? You notice that there's a little smiley face after practical method. Just have to stop the breathing, not think of anything, like that. Prayojana. The ultimate goal to yoga is the state beyond thinking and feeling in which the individual soul is linked with the supreme soul. Right? So basically they just merge into the Lord's existence. Like that. But it could also be taken if it's in the Vaishnava form, where then they, seeing the super soul, they surrender and take up devotional service, as in Shankya. Right? Like that. So in other words, that we can see is that these are all part of the Vaishnava system. It's just that if you accept its connection there, then it works. It has its place. But if you don't, then you're trying to make a complete philosophy out of a portion.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Did you say that Shankya has got two lines?
Shankya has the theistic and atheistic. Same like yoga. It means they always accept he's the supreme being, whether you want to merge into him or whether you want to keep your identity separate and serve him and take up devotional service. So Shankya, in other words, you're analyzing the universe to see how it's different from you and how it functions, so you can reverse the process of entanglement and come back to service to the Lord. The atheistic is you just reverse the process that you're entangled and then come to the liberated state. You know, same with just like you use logic to understand who you are, who God is, material nature, and what is, you know, devotional service, what's not. You use logic for that. You know, so that would be the natural system to use it to understand your relationship with the Lord. But in this case, then they're taking it that there is no relationship with the Lord, you know, there's just the Lord and there's you, you know. Does that make sense? You know, like there's the prime, you know, the Chancellor of Germany. He's there. But what's it got to do with you? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, nice. You know, you do your thing, he does his. So you just come to the liberated state. Right? In other words, there's the theistic, there's the devotional and the non-devotional. Right? Same as we understand the atoms, how it's all there, so therefore it makes it easier to understand how material nature is the cause. Because as you have these atoms, and by the modes of nature, they form together and form the different shapes and forms. So we're seeing it as a big thing, how to get this element to change into that kind of thing. But for them, it's just a matter of how many atoms that you put together of each one thing makes that proportion that makes the different thing. So you just move the atoms, and then it's done. So for Maya, it's very easy to transform. For us to get her to transform, that's the hard part. Yes.
Also, we see yoga for the first time. They start to worry about the mind because until now they were just giving intelligence.
Intelligence, true. Yeah, that's also there. So the emotions stopping the senses, this, that, the others. They're not worried about stopping the senses because the senses are your main point of information.
Yeah.
So they don't want to stop them. In fact, they put more focus on the information coming in from the senses than on anything else like that. Gotama accepts Shabda, but Vaisheshika doesn't. You know. So in other words, the element is Shabda is there, so you have to. But you take that knowledge and then you practice so you can see it. Right? Shastra says birth, death, old age, and disease. So you look, you can see it with your senses. So since that's the point, then it appears Vaisheshika said, why bother with the Shabda? Just worry about the, you know. Yeah. Yeah, whatever. It's a problem. Okay. And then we have karma mimamsa. Okay. So yoga is you're linked with the Supreme Soul. That's what yoga means, to connect or link with the Supreme Soul. But the question is whether you do that in devotion or whether you merge. Right? In other words, the impersonal again.
Yoga, that is separate.
It means God is there.
Yeah.
Then you have the material energy. Then you have the soul.
And they're all separate.
Means in all of them, they're all separate.
And they don't even coexist.
Just they're not worried, I guess, about the coexistent element.
The soul is pure consciousness, no origin in God.
But you're saying they all say that. It's just that this is important to them. That it doesn't originate in God. And the other ones, it's not.
Sankhya yoga are very connected. It's the only difference is that yoga accepts Ishvara and Sankhya doesn't. And then yoga lays down this emphasis on the meditation and control of the mind. Otherwise, the all metaphysics are the same. Just, some even say there are two kinds of Sankhya. One is Patanjali Sankhya, another one is the
Kapilas. Oh, okay. So Naya and Vaisheshika are connected, and Shankya and Yoga are connected. Oh, so Yoga basically uses all the analysis of Shankya, just uses meditation as their method of elevation. Okay.
And accepts Ishvara. And accepts Ishvara as just one of the means to attain this level of samadhi. He's just the helper.
Oh, okay. It's amazing. What do you call it? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you know, one of the amazing things is how something so small can have such a big ego. Karma Mimamsa. Karma Mimamsa does not admit the existence of God as the creator and destroyer of the universe. The universe is eternal without beginning and end. As in Nyaya Vaisheshika, the soul is eternal spiritual substance. Consciousness is not intrinsic to the soul. Just because you're interacting with it, then you're conscious of it. If you weren't interacting, you wouldn't be. So here is that they don't worry about God as a creator and destroyer. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Right? Because you want to enjoy fruit of work, so you don't want it to end. So therefore the universe is eternal without beginning and end. You understand? So God's not, he may be the maintainer, but he's not the creator and destroyer.
Because basically that's themselves. I mean, in the sense that they're controlling. No, but in the sense that they're controlling, and by control you will.
Yes, but I think it's more here is just the element that they want to enjoy eternally. So therefore you don't emphasize too much the creator and destroyer part. Because then that would bring up the temporariness. And so even if I perform my karma, I do everything perfectly, I get all the good pious activity, the universe is still going to end.
It's still futile.
You know? Yes. But even if it ends, it'll start again.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, hey, when it starts again, then, you know, you'll continue to enjoy. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, definitely has got a long-term vision there. But, but not so... The method for attaining the ultimate goal is performance of prescribed duties, right? So by performing your prescribed duties, then you're going to get. And the goal is, the ultimate goal of life, according to Karmani Mamsa, is the attainment of heaven, or a state in which there is unalloyed bliss. The Mimamsakas aspire after conscious, active, happy life, enjoying all the pleasures which the universe can offer.
Sounds good.
Now that's something my any world religion would take.
Yeah,
that's
it.
You know, one sentence, it sums it up. You know, nobody else can say it that good, right? You know, think about it. Conscious, active, happy life, enjoying all the pleasures which the universe can offer. Sold to the lowest bidder. Total mundane consciousness. Yeah, Vedanta. Alright, so that's very, in one sense, very, means the principle of getting rid of material suffering. That's the common point of all the philosophies, but their method of doing it is totally opposite of everybody else's. And the amazing thing is, because of this element, generally Karma Mimamsa can defeat any of the other philosophies.
Mm.
So for defeating what's below Karma Mimamsa, in other words, the first four, you use Karma Mimamsa.
Mm.
But if you want to defeat Karma Mimamsa, you have to use Vedanta.
Mm. But you would also be able to just use Vedanta too.
Yeah, but I'm saying sometimes it's already been done so nicely.
Mm.
You know, this like Nyaya's, you know, principle of how you can tell God exists.
Mm.
Right, has already been done.
Mm.
So it's very, very nicely, you know, they've already worked it out. Just, they've worked out something very nice, they just don't know the rest of it, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, how you say, some aboriginals in some, maybe it's in Borneo, or some or way out of the way, little island somewhere, they've worked out that there's this nut, and by dealing with the nut in a certain way, you can get this certain kind of like oil from it. It's kind of like a, but it's you know, it's kind of like they call it shea butter, right? And so then this shea butter is just something they've been using from time immemorial, right? Like that. And so they have that element, and somehow know that's one of the latest things in the whole cosmetic industry. It's the best at, you know, at making the skin soft and nice, and it's natural, and this and that fits all the criterion. But so they have the shea butter; they just don't have, you know, the Fifth Avenue boutique and the whole lifestyle that goes along with it, right? But they got the shea butter. You understand? So in other words, all these other philosophies, they have one part that's really well done. And so you don't have to do it again. But the problem is it only does one part. You have to take it and do the rest with it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Vedanta. Sambandha. God is the origin of everything. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all blissful due to being the reservoir of unlimited positive transcendental attributes, such as beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, and renunciation, strength. Matter is inferior energy of God. The soul is superior energy of God. Abhideya, devotional service to God is the process for attaining the ultimate goal of life. Prayojana, the ultimate goal of life is the development of the dormant love of God. So you see, that makes sense. And it's very clear, but at the same time, it's so far beyond all the others. You can see others just have little parts that fit in there, right? It means the soul is superior energy of God, so that they are the consciousness, but whether it's natural to him, the conscious not, or he's eternal, that they all kind of get, but, you know, matter's inferior energy of God, but where it is it the cause of consciousness, this and that, they can't quite catch these quite things, you know, and God, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they don't get just, he may be the creator, maintainer, destroyer, or he's just the maintainer, or, you know, or he doesn't have to do any of that, you know, just material, you know, so it's like that.
If they come back, karma and mimamsa and Vedanta go together.
No, karma and mimamsa and Vedanta don't go together.
They don't.
No.
But, so you said earlier that we use karma and mimamsa to defeat the other four?
Yeah.
So...
That means it's because you're following your duties and doing these kind of things in this way, you know, because otherwise, then how do you define what are duties?
If there are no duties, then there's
yeah, but how do you know that that'll work? You mean, it says it's very nice, but how do you know that'll work? So the point is unless God's given a system, so you follow the duties, that works, you know. So in other words, they have some things to defeat the others.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because the others are saying, get out of the material world. So they have to have somebody defeat them to say, no, you stay here. Yes. So the part that you stay here, that's the part we don't use from there.
But it's interesting, they say they do not admit the existence of God, and the Abhideya is performance of prescribed duties. Who prescribed them?
That's...
the universal principle.
Oh.
Universal principle.
Dharma. Yeah. Even God is... under this principle, he has to award the results of your prescribed duties. He must do that.
So I control God.
Basically.
My duties.
Yeah, by if you perform your
duties. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's
like... those who follow through the Mimamsa, they get to heaven?
They probably get to heaven. And then come back.
You again.
Yeah, you know, there's only so much time you can stay there. Okay, so that gives a kind of general
very nice
idea. Category of generality. Generality we did, okay, up to universality. Vaisheshika, okay. Vaisheshika recognizes three levels of generality or universality. Highest, lowest, and intermediate. The highest kind of generality is existence itself, sutta. Beginningness, or the state of being, is the highest generality because all other universals are subsumed under it. It is all-pervading and nothing is excluded from it, right? Because existence means if it doesn't exist, you know, then how do you give a generality, right? You know, if you're making a generality about dogs, that means existence has to be already there. So existence is the first, is the highest principle of generality.
Yeah.
Okay. The lowest kind of generality has the most limited references, such as Americanness, Indianness, potness, and chairness, which are the generalities present in all Americans, Indians, pots, and chairs, respectively. I'm not sure if there was a particular hidden meaning to these four categories here or something. Concepts such as substantiality, having the nature of substances, represent the intermediate level of generality because they do not include many other categories of reality like quality, actions, and so on. Substantiality, having the nature of substances, represents the intermediate. You don't have the text. No, okay. Just trying to see what is this substantiality. What does he mean by substance? Oh, but before he already gave substance, right? Didn't he define substance? substance is dravya. Oh, okay, okay. Okay, so you have earth, water, fire, air, space, time, direction, soul, mind. So those are substance. So it's, it has that, but it's not produced, made into anything. In other words, you have existence itself, which is the basis on which everything is, right? Then you have the substances that are there, that exist, right? These nine substances. Then you have the forms in that take, so that are specific.
Yeah.
You know, so then that takes on a particular, the actualness of it. You know. But the one thing is what they miss here is that, see, they're only catching the feminine aspect. You know what I'm saying? Because these are all there. The existence is the masculine. But what they're missing is that existence itself has all these qualities. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, means the... they're not differentiating between, let's say, pothood and potness.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, the inherent nature of a pot that is defined by God Himself, and then the manifestation of the pot.
Mm.
Right? Mm. So the reason the manifestation of the pot, you can give generality, is because it's based on the principle of the potness.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's because it has some connection that to the Lord, some aspect within His personality, within His pastimes, within... Does that make sense? Mm. So because they're not having to worry about the person, they just is what you see manifest, that's the thing. It has its qualities, it has its activities, it has its usefulness. You know, but behind that is the elements that they're made out of. Behind that is then it goes back to the, you know, just the atoms, and then there's just the existence of everything. So, in other words, they're trying to get back to the existence platform.
Yes.
You know, yes. So there is no other generalities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because they don't include many other categories of reality, like quality, actions, and so on, because that comes after it's manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Means the lowest one does have.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. The category of uniqueness, vishesha. So this is what gives the philosophy its name. Vishesha, or uniqueness, is that characteristic of a thing by virtue of which it is distinguished from all other things, like the imperceptible substances of space, time, direction, soul, and mind. Vishesha is abstract and is therefore eternal. Everything in the world, regardless of whether it is existent or non-existent, is accompanied by uniqueness. Generality, samanya, and uniqueness, vishesha, are opposite concepts.
What's their uniqueness?
Hmm?
What's their uniqueness? Adam?
Means that's how he's defining that this element of uniqueness, or vishesha, accompanied by uniqueness. It means it exists, so it has that unique thing, but then there's generality. You know, you have the pot, so the pot itself is unique. But at the same time, as there is the potness that in generality is like all the other pots. So that generality is one thing. The opposite is just, it's just a pot that has its own quality.
I asked about the uniqueness they have by Shesha.
Yes.
What's their unique?
That they include the element of uniqueness.
Yeah.
That's what it said.
They will admit also Shabda, Nyayasdu.
Yeah. Because Gautama doesn't seem to worry about uniqueness. You know, because you're always trying to find, basically, you're trying to find the generality. Generality is everything about Vaisheshi. I mean, Nyaya, because you find what's the universal principle that connects them. then you can make the logic. But he's pointing out here is that it's unique, it's individual. So I guess that's what makes it
big ego.
Yes, that's big false ego.
Yeah, something.
There is a connection between generality and abstract.
Abstract means that you can't perceive it with the senses. I think that's the point. And so, according to them, what can't be perceived by the senses is eternal.
Yes.
Because if you can perceive it by the senses, means it's manifest,
yes,
and unmanifest. But if it can't be perceived by the senses, that means then it's eternal. Because the atoms are eternal.
Yes.
You know, so all these things on that platform are eternal, so then you can't see it. As soon as they manifest, then you can see with the senses, but that means they're temporary. So that's how they're, but they're not getting it. That even means that's there, but the whole process of manifesting and non-manifesting, what does that have to do? And then there's another realm beyond that's made up of different atoms. Right? So they don't even know about the spiritual atoms. And the manifestations there, that's eternal.
And they also, they put themselves as an authority on that? Means whatever they can perceive, whatever they can, then it's eternal?
Well, it just means it's understood in the scriptures that these things aren't perceived. You can't perceive with the senses.
So they take it from the scriptures? And
yeah, it means all of these are based on the Shastra, on the Veda. The difficulty is they're just taking some particular aspects, and so other aspects they're not focusing on. You know, it's just like he's saying the material world is karma. Jaimini's saying that the material world is it's eternal, it's always going on, which it is. It's just to say material energy is eternal, but not its manifestation. But they're kind of dealing as if the manifestation just keeps going. Of course, birth and death is there. That's obvious. You can see it. But the point is next life, then you'll have, your pious activities will continue. Right? Because Manu mentions, when you die, your pious activities go with you.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll see that they do all the karmas, the sun will do the shraddha rites, they'll get all that. Mm-hmm. And because they're doing, the next life will be better than this life. And then they'll continue, and like this. So their idea is that they'll have this mentality eternally. But the problem is when they have all the nice facility, they generally tend to not worry so much about it, and then they become sinful, so it doesn't really work. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the Upanishads, they just seem to completely avoid.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called Purva Mimamsa. It means of the Veda, you're only taking the Purva, the first part, which is the Samhita and the Brahmanas. So the mantras and the rituals by which karmakanda activities are performed. And the Uttara, Uttara Mimamsa, which is the Aranyakas and the Upanishads, that they don't bother with. Because that says the material world is here, birth, death, old age, and disease, you can't enjoy here, this, that, blah. You know, so that's why you end up, there's these two main philosophies. You know, your karma and your jnana. You can enjoy here, you can't enjoy here.
What's their excuse for discarding this part of the Veda?
I guess it's if you do this right, why you should worry about that? I guess they figure they're losers, who didn't know how to do the stuff right.
Yeah,
they will not even perform sacrifice if there is a sannyasi present. Because it's considered very, very inauspicious.
Oh.
If a monk is somewhere there.
Wow. Yeah. Probably also like weddings, you don't do, there can't be widows there.
Far out.
Yeah.
Oh, they have no prejudice.
Well, I mean, widow means it didn't quite work out, so you don't want to.
Interesting.
And if they accept Vedas as well, and Gautama accepts Shabda?
Means the other things, because Veda does talk about Pratyaksha and Anuman, so he's just taking those parts. So, in other words, they've somehow or another just taken those parts that they can relate to and left the other parts. But there's also the element that these particular six viewpoints are the materialistic viewpoints.
And they're generally common?
The common thing is that they're material.
No, I mean that they're those are common conditioning?
Means anything, everything follows according to this. Okay. Now, it may be that it's not purely Gotama, purely Vaisheshika. It'll be a mix of this and that and so many. So they'll have some aspect of this, some aspect of that. And it's not that they'll be complete like these. So these are the complete form of that particular kind of material vision. Mm-hmm. Like that. It means you won't get better than that as far as that. So most other philosophies, their derivatives will only be a portion of it. Mm-hmm. You know, does that make sense? It's only a portion of it. But they may elaborate on that portion very greatly, so it seems like there's a lot. You know, just like Aristotle, there's a lot of volume, but he doesn't discuss the spiritual. Mm-hmm. So actually all these elaborated on is part of Socrates' philosophy. Is that make sense? So it doesn't contain all the things that Socrates has. But, so it just takes a portion of it. You know, and then so many points they'll miss, so many points they elaborate on and pull from here and there. And so that way you end up with more mixes. So the Vedic, you get these six. But when you go outside of that, you can get a lot more. Because within these are subdivisions. Like someone's doing karma mamsa, but they're just worshipping the demigods. They're not doing so much, or you know, it's not as focused as here. Or, you know. And then you have, you know, non-Vedic. So in other words, there's with the Vedic mentality that's bogus, you can get these six, you know, and then any combination, what you want to do within this. But generally, within the Vedic, they'll be referring to these. So someone won't be a pure of one school. He'll quote from here and he'll quote from there and this way and kind of put his own philosophy. But he still use these six. If it's non-Vedic, then you end up with, you know, over 20. Like that. And all they are is basically these two categories of Purva-Mimamsa, meaning material world, I'll be happy from it. Material world, you can't be happy from it. Those are the two main divisions between all philosophies and religions.
Pessimists and optimists?
Yeah, that's basically. Mm-hmm. And then within that you have so many subdivisions mm-hmm. like that.
But we generally see that these pure bogus philosophies would defeat the mixes. Or
yeah, I would expect because there's so much more developed. Mm. Like that. So much more developed. But you can see is that the most developed is the Vedanta. So if that's understood, you can defeat anything else. It's just a matter of being able to translate it into these words and concepts that others are using. Because they see is they have fancy words for everything. You know? But it's not that we don't know the concept, we just don't necessarily know the term.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like there, he was making these different things on the upper, the middle, and the you know, and the lower. But we have a more developed concept. But you know, just don't know his terminology, so it's hard to figure out what he's talking about.
In relation to the class this morning, somebody who is not fully surrendered means he's taking one or more of these six systems in his life.
Yeah, basically. Like that. There's some mix of it. But generally they're pretty standard, you know, because it's either karma or jnana. You know,
yes.
But it's just, it has to be. Now, you know, you're not thinking of how God is involved that much you know, how much more you're the controller or, you know, I'm going to Mangalarti, I'm chanting my rounds, I'm following the principles, I've been doing this for so long, why do I have so many material problems? So that's karma mimamsa, because karma mimamsa, I do the work, God has to respond. He has to give me the facilities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't, you know, so we'll say that's fruitive mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, the philosophy of fruitive mentality is karma mimamsa.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that we're, you know, a mimamsakist, you know, here. It just means that we're contaminated by that. Just we don't know. Just it's what we do.
Mm-hmm. You know. Maharaj, Christianity has taken a whole chunk in karma
Yeah, yeah. No, but I mean that last line that it had there, it's just like, I mean, even they would be proud of that, you know. It's like,
that was beautiful.
Oh yeah. I would say it's all the Abrahamic religions would take that one lock, stock, and barrel. You know. That, huh? Yeah, they would say, no, we came up with that.
Yeah. 3,000 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just there. It's just there. Yeah, it can't get better than that.
It's really nice.
I mean, I would say is you could probably even go over the atheistic Asians would use this one.
Yeah.
You know? They would, yeah. You know, so what was it? You know, Prabhupada, you have all these business people came together when Prabhupada was going to, what was it? The printers, that printing house in Japan.
Dainippon,
yeah. And so everybody comes and they all give their cards and all that. You know, that way you know who they are, but it also you know what their level is. You know, it's the whole thing. So all these cards are on the table. And then after everybody's gone and one guy's still talking with Prabhupada, Prabhupada asks him, so for you, what would be the ultimate perfection of life? He went over to the cards on the table, pulled his one out from the bottom, and slapped it on the top. Yeah. Very dramatically, you know. So he wants to be the head of the company. You know, in fact, I'm not sure. I think devotees told me he later did become the head.
Yeah.
Like that. But, but that was the, you know, so yeah, so like that. Yeah, yeah. So he's got, yeah, but here's that. Enjoying all the pleasures which the universe can offer. You know, so, you know, that's what he wants, you know. I can't remember. I was having this conversation with somebody. I can't remember if it was a devotee telling me about it or an actual, I think, Chinese person telling me personally. I think it was a devotee telling me. But he was having this conversation with one of the Chinese men. They were saying about, you know, all these different things, the material things and all that. And just says, what's it called? It says, I want all that. You know, you want the house, you want the house. All the different standard things that are there. He wants all that, you know. So that's the thing, you know, the money, the house, the prestige, the, you know, car, everything. You know, so you gotta have. Yeah. So it's just whatever there is to that the universe can offer. He wants it, you know? Like that. What's that? I saw a sticker on the car. I think it was in Vrindavan. Right? Simple. It says, "All I want is everything."
Yeah, that's the other one. Too much never seems to be enough.
Too much never seems to be enough. Yeah, yeah, like that. So these are all in line with the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Just that the problem is you know, unalloyed, all the different, their definitions are weak.
Mm.
Because unalloyed means there's nothing else mixed, and there's always something else mixed. So that's the difficulty with these things, is that they've taken the words, used them in a certain way, but actually they don't function only in that way. As we saw before, we get into difficulties because there's a word used, and then as we go along, the context of the word changes, we get confused because the word's supposed to mean this. No, it can mean all these things because there's a common thread, but it can be meaning applying it here, applying it there, applying it all these different things. Right? You know, eternal happiness means here, it's just, I have that feeling it'll be there forever, you know, that romantic element. So that's here. Heavenly planets, it's Amara, no one dies there, you know, they live longer than here. But still, they die. So, but that's the heavenly planets. Then Brahman, is that's the eternal happiness, right? Because then you're there, but it's still temporary. So the actual only eternal happiness is devotional service. Right? So it has all these stages, and which you can define according to the mundane perception, then there's the absolute definition. So you have a variety of mundane definitions, and then you have the absolute definition. Is that my turn? So, like that, then you have all these difficulties that the terms that they use then sometimes don't satisfy, you know, for actually dealing on the transcendental platform. You know, so that's the weakness. Okay, the category of inherence, samavaya. There are two kinds of relationships between things: conjunction, samyoga, and inherence, samavaya. Conjunction is one of the 24 qualities, gunas, of Vaisheshika. But inherence is one of the 7 categories of reality described in the system. Right? In other words, the dravya. Right? Isn't that it? Yes. The 7 is the dravyas. No, they're 9. So what's the 7? The 7. You have the 7.
That's the 7 categories of reality?
Oh, you mean should be mentioned. Described in the system. Conjunction, unless it... Oh, it means the whole thing. Okay, yeah, that's what 7 is. Yeah, okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Right. Good. Okay, conjunction is one of the 24 qualities, so it's just within the one point of quality. But inherence is one of the 7 categories of reality described in the system. Conjunction is a temporary, non-eternal relationship between two things that may be separated at any time. In this kind of relationship, two or more things exist together, but each remains essentially unaffected by the others. For example, when a chair and a table are conjoined together, this does not change the existence of the chair or the table. Thus, conjunction is an external relationship existing as an accidental quality of the substances related to it. Right. Okay, so, you know, like a kid with a baseball bat and a ball in a living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. They just, each remain, well, you can't say each remains. The kid remains unaffected, so that would be the room doesn't. Okay. Thus, conjunction is, okay. On the other hand, inherence, on the other hand, is a permanent relation between two entities, one of which inheres in the other, as, for example, in the relation of the whole in its parts, a quality in its substance, or the universal in the individual. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have the universal is still there in the individual. So the individual is still the visesha, and then within that is the universal. Because you're applying the universal to the individual, so maybe Gotama doesn't worry about the individual. But, so he's more sensitive. You know, like that. A conjunctural relation is temporary and is produced by the action of either or both of the things related to it. For example, the relation between a man and a chair in which he is sitting is temporary. Right? That makes sense? So therefore, you're dealing with the qualities in that. Mm-hmm. An inherent relation, in contrast, is not temporary and is not produced. Right? It's inherent in it. So that's the meaning. The relation that exists between a whole and its parts, for instance, is not produced because the whole is always related to its parts. As long as the whole is not broken up, it must exist in the parts. Thus, inherence is an eternal or permanent relation between two entities, one at which depends on its existence upon the other. The whole cannot exist separately from its parts. Right? Well, we put it the other way. The parts can't exist separately from the whole. Because the whole is, you know, for us is independent. Right? But they're only dealing with the material element, because anything here manifest, right, means that universal element is still made up of atoms that can be taken apart. But that manifestation, that relationship between the universality of the individuals within that is always there. Right? So whether it's man, it means whether men are manifest or not, there is the nature of men. Mm-hmm. Right, so therefore a man is part of men.
Yes.
Right, so that there's that inherence that's there. This word conjunction, is that used in this section, or why does he bring up conjunction here?
One of the 24 qualities.
Probably because it has to do with relationships between.
Just trying
things.
To see what's so. The where it's distinctness, separation, remoteness, newness. But conjunction seems to be a group of these things, because you could have all those things. Because you're happy because of the nearness of the chair to the table.
Maybe because it's the opposite of parents.
Oh, could be. Yeah, is there a specific anything you saw, or
maybe it's just this part that should go somewhere else?
Because I'm not sure that when it was defined before, that it didn't put them together. Because I kind of remember saying the two words together, but I don't remember where. So, continuing. Two terms within an inherent relationship cannot be reversed, as can those that are related by conjunction. Right? Conjunction, you can reverse them.
Yeah.
You know, that one may work, one may not, this and that, but in there. For example, in order for there to be a conjunctural relation of hand and pen, pen and hand must both be in some kind of contact with each other. But in an inherent relation, this is not necessary. You know, one man can be here and another man somewhere else, but the inherence is there, whether they're in contact or not. A quality or action is in a substance, but the substance is not in the quality or action. There is color in a cloth, but no cloth in color. There is an action in a fan, but no fan in the action. Okay. 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 Category of non-existence, abhava. Okay. Thank you. Abhava, non-existence, is the seventh and last category of reality, and the last category of reality is negative in contrast to the first six categories, which are positive. Non-existence is not found in any of the six positive categories, and yet, according to Vaisheshika philosophy, non-existence exists.
Interesting.
Just as, for instance, space and direction do. To illustrate, how does one know that there is no chair in a room? Looking into a room, one can feel as sure of the non-existence of the chair as of the existence of the carpet or of the people. Therefore, non-existence also exists as such. But that's, how do you say
it?
That means a lot of spare time,
yeah,
on this guy's hands that he could sit around and actually worry about that.
You wonder if you count all the things that don't exist in the room.
Yeah, you could. So there's a lot non-exist. There's a lot of non-exist. There's no elephants, no armadillos like that. The limousine is definitely not here. I mean, the room's only 6 by 8 feet. You know, like that. Yeah, well, that proves it.
Yeah.
But then you could scrunch the limousine up, and then it would fit in the room. Yes, but the scrunched up is not here either. So. There are two kinds of non-existence: the absence of something in something else, samsara bhava, and mutual non-existence, anyonya bhava. This anyonya comes up somewhere. That was in the Vedic psychology. This anyonya was discussed a lot. The absence of something in something else. Okay, you have absence of something in something else and mutual absence, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so of absence in something else, there are three kinds. Now, we were already impressed. It was already too much thought, just the concept. But now it goes on to give detail, right? Okay. Antecedent non-existence, pragbhava, the non-existence of a thing after its destruction, pradvamsha bhava, and absolute non-existence, atyanta bhava, Antecedent non-existence refers to the non-existence of a thing prior to its creation. For example, in the sentence, a book will be written using this paper. So the book is not there. Right? The book is non-existent in the paper. This type of non-existence does not have a beginning, but it does have an end. Right? It means, in other words, the non-existence will at one point end and it will exist.
So the non-existence will cease to exist.
Yeah. I guess it must have the other way around also. Existence that wasn't there and now has stopped. Existence that has... Okay. This type of non-existence does not have a beginning, but it does have an end. The book never existed before it was written. Therefore, there is a beginningless non-existence to the book. But when it does come to be written, its previous non-existence will come to an end. In direct contrast to antecedent non-existence, the non-existence of the thing after its destruction has a beginning, but does not have an end. Right? It was there, and now it's not there. For instance, when a jar is broken into pieces, then there is non-existence of that jar. The non-existence of the jar begins with its destruction, but this non-existence cannot be ended in any way, because the same jar cannot be brought back into existence. Right? So those are the reverse. Okay. The type of non-existence does not belong to a particular time and space, but is in all times, is called absolute non-existence, right? So in other words, it has no beginning, it has an end. It has no end, it has a beginning, right? And then there's, it has no beginning or end, right? So this is the absolute non-existence. For this type of non-existence is neither subject to origin nor to end. It's both beginningless and endless. Examples are the non-existence of the son of a barren couple, or the non-existence of color in the air.
This is good for armchair speculating.
Yeah. I mean, there must be some application to it. You know? The point is this. Because he'll use this to establish something that then establishes about freeing yourself from the material energy.
Okay.
So as far as liberating yourself, there must be some element to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, this, you know, means Bhagavatam will talk what, you know, mean about what has no beginning. You know, means, you know, why you're worried about that it has, you know, an end or something that has an end. What, you know, he talks about that principle that we worry about it. Means everything has a beginning and an end. So why you're worried about it? You know, we've lost something, or we want to gain something. And so if you want it, then it'll be lost. In other words, if you can perceive it, it's temporary. It'll be lost. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so all these different things are what we're actually in, how we're involving or entangling ourselves in the material energy. Mutual non-existence, anyonya bhava, the second of the two major divisions of non-existence, is the difference of one thing from another. When one thing is different from another, they mutually exclude each other. And there is the non-existence of either as the other. For example, a pen is different from a book. So there is non-existence of the book in the pen and of the pen in the book. Yeah.
Fine.
Now, what was impressive was all the definition of everything to explain this Sambandha section. Now we get down to the, you know, two sentence abhideya and prayojana. The Vaisheshika concepts of God, of the liberation of the soul, and of the path to liberation are all basically the same as the Nyaya concepts, which have already been discussed in the preceding chapter. Both Vaisheshika and Nyaya systems accept the liberation of the individual self as the end goal. Both view ignorance as the root cause of all pain and misery. And both believe that liberation is attained only through the right knowledge of reality. So in there is that technically for liberation, it's correct. But the problem is right knowledge, they don't actually know what the right knowledge is. You know, that's the difficult. And if you want to just go on just the mundane, what you see here, you have to have such very nice intelligence to be able to always focus and be able to spend your time doing this, that you could come to this conclusion. Right? So it would not be a practical method. You know? So the point is that by knowing the Lord, the relationship between God, the living entity, and the material energy in devotional service, in other words, according to the Vedanta aspect, then what they're trying to get, you get automatically. So the point is what all these other systems are trying to get, Vedanta automatically gets as a side benefit. Right? The devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking before, is that the devotee, he's performing his duties, right, as a grihastha, and without attachment, and therefore he's getting all facility and all enjoyment. At the same time, it's because of his attachment to the Supreme Lord, he's being freed from all material entanglement. So he's got so he has the material enjoyment and liberation at the same time. But he's not worried about either of them. Right? He is worried about the Lord. So it's said that for the devotee who's absorbed in the Lord, then this karma and liberation are standing as maidservants. Because he's already liberated, and he already has all facilities. Right? So,
That's why Krishna says in the 12th chapter that all the results of studying the Vedas, performing austerities, one performing devotional service gets all these.
Yes.
But now, for this Vaisheshika, where is the Abhideya? It's like knowledge.
It's by here. It says by correct knowledge. It says the Vaisheshika concepts of God of liberation and the path of liberation are basically the same as Nyaya. In other words, you analyze the material energy and you get factual knowledge, then that factual knowledge will free you from entanglement. Because you know it's temporary, it's not you, so why you're involved in it? Right? So in that way, then they free themselves from the material entanglement. But ignorance is the root cause. So if you have knowledge, then you get rid of it. But they don't understand knowledge means knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Like that. So. We seem to have. Did we run out?
Yeah.
So do we have. Where's the.
It's like this much.
It looks like that. Aha. Okay, so let me look for that. Ha! Here it is.
It's existent.
Yeah.
The non-existence.
We were perceiving the non-existence of the book. That was not true knowledge because it actually was existing. So now with true knowledge, our anxiety has been relieved.
Nice philosophy.
Okay. Shankya. So this is the non-theistic, because the theistic we know in the Kapila, right? Means the son of Devahuti. Means there's another Kapila who then put this together. Does that mention that in here about the... Okay, here, there's an opening here. Shankya philosophy. No, here. You have one?
You go ahead.
Okay. Shankya philosophy, considered by some to be the oldest of all the philosophical schools, was systematized by an ancient thinker called Kapila, different from the Devahuti Putra, Kapila of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The word Shankya, according to the Amar Kosh, means discussion and investigation. It is derived from the word Samkhya, which means number. Right, so then discussions and investigation, because we remember in the what we call in Nyaya, then there was the element of what was that? Inquiry, right? Means Tarka. Tarka was how to properly ask questions, right? So that you get to, so that proper submissive inquiry, then you're going to get the answers, right? So then basically it's the same thing, but it's just this is much more developed in the way of analyzing how everything is. The first work of non-theistic Shankya, the Shankya Sutra, is traditionally attributed to Kapila, but in its present form it is not his original work. So Shankya Karika of Ishvara Krishna is actually the earliest available Shankya text. Among its more well-known commentaries are Gaudapada's Bhashya, Vachaspati Mistra's Tattva Kalmudi, Vijnana Bhikshu's Shankya Pravachan Bhashya, and Matara's Matara Vritti. Topics traditionally emphasized by Kapila, Ishwara Krishna, and other Shankya commentators are the theory of causation, the concept of Prakriti, the unconscious principle, and Purusha, the conscious principle, the evolution of the world, the concept of liberation, and the theory of knowledge. The special feature of Shankya is its summing up of all the Nyaya and Vaisheshika constituents of reality, with the exception of Ishwara, God, who is simply excluded from the system. Makes it easy.
Yeah.
Into two fundamental principles, Purusha and Prakriti. Nirishvara Shankya, non-theistic Shankya, is therefore a dualistic philosophy. Right? So there's everything goes back into Purusha and Prakriti. That's their principle. So because means in Kapila's, it doesn't come out as strongly there because it's the Lord and the living entity. Right? Does that make sense? You're always dealing. And then the living entity thinks he's the Lord of the material energy. But the Lord is the Lord of Prakriti, which is has two parts, superior and inferior. Right? So you have Purusha, Prakriti. Right? Gita talks about it. But it doesn't become so prominent. So it is an aspect of the philosophy. But we don't take it as prominent as here. Like that, because it fits into the natural devotional position of how the living entity is serving the Lord by engaging the material energy in the Lord's service. You had something?
Yeah. What's their basis? All those philosophies, what their basis is, like in the Vedas, what they quote?
Different, whatever it is that they feel is prominent, they'll quote those verses. Like that. Because the Veda deals with everything. So all the subject matters. All of all the books of knowledge are all based from the Veda. Right? So it has everything. It has the basis of where you get the philosophical. It has the basis of all the material. Right? So because it's focused in that way, it's aparusha. It's aparavidya, because it's dealing in such a way that you may not catch the transcendental. But the Veda then does have the commentaries on that, which is the Upanishads that are transcendental. So, but that's counted as mimamsa, so the paravidya. So then everybody means everything has to be taken back to the Veda. Right? So you see that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they could take back to the Veda. So that one is when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving the Dasamul, he's giving evidence from the Veda. Right? Because his point is, if it doesn't come from Veda and Vedanta, then it's not actually, has substance. Mm-hmm. Right? So then they do that. So they all also go back to the Veda. Does that make sense? Just so they'll quote those parts from it. So some may be more on the what do you call it? Upanishadic area, some more on other aspects, or, some conversation, something there that they'll pull the verses and that are dealing with that principle. So something we'll mention about, the atoms like that, because we see Bhagavatam talks about it, but it doesn't emphasize it so much. It's just that there's atoms there, they're the smallest particle, thing like that, and since that's the material energy without manifestation, naturally that's eternal, because the external energy is eternal. It's one of the Lord's eternal potencies. So, but we don't put much focus on that, but then they'll put that focus on. In other words, what you see is the manifestation, but actually the atoms in the natural state aren't. But that's pradhan. So that's great for getting out of the material world, because it starts with pradhan, then mahat, it separates, then after that it gets made into something. But it's not describing the transcendental realm and the manifestation of that according to yoga maya. So we're only seeing mahamaya. Does that make sense? So going back to the conscious thing is that the material energy is transforming, but that's being controlled by Mahamaya. Right? The Mahamaya is just that office of the Sarup Shakti. So in other words, Krishna's supreme potency is controlling it. Right? But we're not the ones doing it, so we have to see that it's transforming itself. But why is it transforming in that way? Only because you're following the activities that go along with the actual forms that you can do to attain that particular quality. But so, in other words, the material energy itself is doing the transforming, right? Does that make sense? You know, so yeah. You know, because we're saying it's dead matter, but that dead matter is still controlled by the Sarup Shakti, because the Sarup Shakti means it's the internal, external, and marginal potency. Right? And then that energy is non-different from Krishna. So that means Krishna is everything. And his potency are these three. And then these three then have their own existences. Does that make sense? So if it's in connection with Krishna, it's dealt with by yoga mind. If it's not in connection with Krishna, it's dealt with by Mahamaya. But Mahamaya and Yogamaya are the same person. They're the Sarup Shakti. All it is that they're taking the office according to how we see Krishna's energy. Does that make sense? Okay. Sambandha. Shankya does not admit the existence of God. Instead, it sums up reality into two fundamental principles. Matter, prakriti, is the conscious principle, which is the ultimate cause of the world. And the soul, purusha, both the subject of knowledge and the object of knowledge. Purusha is not merely a substance with the attribute of consciousness, but is rather pure consciousness itself. Right? Because the other ones, that they were saying the consciousness is not inherent in the soul. So here he's saying the soul is consciousness. So that's actually closer to the point. The point is the soul is consciousness, because sat, chit, ananda, but the consciousness is the symptom of the soul, because the soul is more. He's also existence and ananda.
He's very close to Shankara as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's very close to Shankara as well.
Shankara means here, the philosophy.
Yeah, this
part. Yeah, so I mean, yeah. So we would pull that, yeah. But then that's, yeah, just they don't make... But here the difference is, there's the supreme consciousness and then us as individual consciousness. While here, with him, there's no supreme consciousness.
Right, so.
Yeah, the soul. But I would in here, when you do it, just put Sambandha, put without the number one, put Shankya does not admit the existence, sums up in two fundamental principles. And then put matter is one and the soul is two. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because it'll make it clear, because otherwise it says two principles, then two, matter. You know, it's just number-wise. Abhideya. Constant contemplation of the truth that the soul, purusha, is different from the body, prakriti, is the process for attaining the ultimate goal. So again, it's trying to establish proper truth. If you have proper knowledge, then you'll free yourself. Right? And as you're saying, yoga is also doing the same thing, that proper knowledge, but then they make an endeavor. Here it's just understanding, the endeavor is the understanding. On yoga there's that endeavor, but then you have the yoga process, that Ashtanga yoga process. So that will set it separately. And then there God's a person, while here God doesn't exist at all.
Right. Minor detail.
Hmm?
Minor detail.
Yes. Prayojana, the ultimate goal is liberation, a state in which the soul is separated from matter and is free of suffering. So I guess he would be conscious of that being freed from suffering, while the other ones, you're just not conscious of it. So what does it matter? You know, then you're asleep, so why worry about it?
Okay. They say that matter is the ultimate cause of the world. So if that's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the soul is separated from matter, it's separated from the world itself.
Yes.
So it comes into some different realm.
Yeah, does it go somewhere? Or?
No, it just ceases to exist. Just like Nagarjuna's Nirvana in Buddhism.
Oh, okay.
Very, very similar to this. It cannot be recognized anymore that it exists, the Purusha. But this is the goal.
So it's just kind of floating around, but not floating around.
He's there, but doesn't
he? He's there, but not there. He's gone through the door of no door. He's attained the place of no place. Okay. They're all weird. Some are more weird.
No, at least my mom's very human.
Yeah, no, it's all weird. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it gives a very clear, okay, yeah, yeah.
Are these philosophies, they're all anudita vivek, unconscious, you know, different levels of unconsciousness?
Basically, yeah.
All dreaming.
It's just that they're, you could say, your highest forms of it. You know, just like the smarta Brahman who's following everything, that's the highest form, like that. So then, that's the karma side. Then when you get to the jnana side, then these are, you know, right up there. Better than this would be the, in one sense, the worship of Vishnu and all those things. But the problem is if you don't accept the Lord, don't know the Lord, don't accept the Lord, that's one thing. But if you know, and then therefore you're going to say he doesn't exist, actually, that's also not very good. So each one is kind of like worse than the other. You know, one recognizes but then doesn't deal with it, or, you know, like that. Okay, Sambandha, concept of God. The earliest available text of Nirishwara Shankya, the Shankya Karika, does not discuss the existence of God at all. The absence of any reference to God led the proponents of this system to conclude that the early Shankya philosophers did not accept the existence of God. Right? So here he just didn't talk about God. That doesn't mean that he doesn't accept that he was there or not. It's just that you don't need it for the system. Because the point is if you just analyze things, and by analyzing and see you're different from the body, you liberate yourself. So that means it's not necessarily, you know, that someone made this place or not made this place, that's not the point. The point is you'll separate yourself. So if they don't talk about God, then it works for their system. That's, of course, if their system works. But, you know, but then he's saying here is that the proponents, then they came to the point that they said that there is no God. But it says that the earliest text, it does not discuss God. It doesn't say there's no God. He just doesn't discuss God. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They argue that because the entire universe is a system of cause and effect, it could not be caused by God, because by definition, God is eternal and immutable. Right? So then here's the comes in things. Then by definition, he's this. You know, yeah. So that these are the problems you get. That which is unchanging cannot be the active cause of anything. So this is a lot like the Shank, the Brahman and all that. So they have to say the illusion is something separate.
Yeah, this way actually they taught the Upanishads a lot.
Shankyas. Oh, okay.
It's very similar.
Okay.
Shankyas.
Okay. So the ultimate cause of the universe is eternal, but ever-changing. That cause is Prakriti, the external and ever-changing, unconscious material principle. In reply to this, one could argue that Prakriti is not intelligent and must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce the universe. Right? Because that's what Nyaya is establishing, is that it's unconscious, so it actually can't be the cause of its own transformation. There must be some, and we see this, if you can make a universe, means a generality, which is universal, that means the things are changing in that according to universal principles. That implies intelligence. Otherwise, why is it always the same? So that was the whole point. Nyaya then establishes, therefore, there must be a supreme because everything is going on very nicely. Right? Because otherwise, here you'll say about Purushas, but the problem is the Purushas are conditioned. And so, therefore, it will be different. And if he's liberated, then he's not involved in the process anyway. You know, so it can't be these Purushas. In reply to this, one could argue that Prakriti is not intelligent and must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce the universe. But because there are many Purushas, they cannot guide and lead the infinite, all-pervading Prakriti. So one must therefore conclude that there is a God. But but this is not possible, the proponents of non-theistic Shankya reply, because the act of controlling or guiding Prakriti means to do something or to be active, right? Because they've already defined that God being eternal and immutable, then he can't be active, because immutable means you can't change, and action means change. So they're saying, by definition, God couldn't do that. So it's not that that God couldn't exist. It's just that God wouldn't be involved. So therefore, I'm trying to get out of here, and it says God's not involved here. Why would I involve him in the process? You know what I'm saying? In addition, if God controls Prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create a world full of pain and misery? Right? Now, people could relate to that.
Yeah, that's
bingo. Yeah. Moreover, one cannot say that God has desires, because desire implies imperfection, which is a quality God cannot have. Right. So in other words, it means they're accepting these higher principles of God, but they can't understand as he's a person. And so there's real feelings, real desires, real, you know, all these different things. They only know the reflected, which is the material, so they can't see how one is the other. So at best, they'll deify to the point where he's not involved at all. And therefore, since he's not involved, then he doesn't need to be involved in the discussion. Right? It means I have to fix my car. It has nothing to do with the prime minister of the country. I can fix the car without talking about it. Doesn't mean he doesn't exist, but he has nothing to do with the car. So why he'd be in the conversation?
Okay. Same point. All those proponents of those philosophies, they used to live quite a few years ago.
Yes.
Kali Yuga?
I don't know how far back they go. It means all these philosophies were always there. Uh-huh. So you have great sages that
I want to say that they all the main point is to be free from miseries.
Right.
Back in those years, it wasn't that miserable here. I mean, not to the extent, and they were still worried.
So well, let's put it like this. There is a day, I forget when it was, I'm not even sure that it wasn't, I can't remember, I don't know the date. During World War I, they were in the trenches, I think, in France, right? Somehow, I don't know why trenches in France. Why didn't they tell them to keep them on German side and mess up their country side? Right? But whatever it is, they're in the trenches there, and they're fighting like anything, and it's really a mess. It wasn't really it was pretty messy. Then somehow or another there was something, and they were worried about doing something, and there was going to be this big thing and all that, and something happened where, I'm not sure that both sides, something, they thought that they saw an apparition of something, of maybe Mother Mary or something like that. And then all the fighting stopped, it was peaceful for the night. Nobody did anything. It's a very famous moment in World War I history. You know, just like, let's say, D-Day in World War II stands out, you know. So here is this stands out within the history, okay? Now, for those guys sitting there, they have boots on that, you know, haven't, you know, that are soaking wet, that they haven't taken off in, you know, weeks or months. It's freezing cold. It's mud up to, you know, how much mud anybody wants. You know, probably the food, the this, the that. It's not very good. But now, that night, they thought was good. That's why it goes down in history as a memorable night. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's all relative. You know what I'm saying?
Probably also.
Yeah, but I'm sure on the heavenly planets they'll go. There's different lakes, and there's a lake that's a little smaller, so you'd go there. You know, you go to the. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
There were probably also fewer of these in other yugas.
Oh, the clock's turned. Okay. And here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Turn the clock the other